that pharmaceutical companies comply with their commitments.
Health officials warn mixed messages from EU leaders about the efficacy of the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine are making citizens reluctant to take the jab. Two other vaccines have been approved here, but supply remains a big problem. A fourth vaccine from Johnson & Johnson is likely to be approved next month. During their summit, EU leaders talked at length about the importance of developing certificates to show people have been vaccinated in order to open up travel. Commentators are describing this as laughable, saying it is putting the cart before the horse, given the current state of play with respect to the rollout of vaccines. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Rome's Association of Palestinians called a sit-in in the vicinity of the Italian parliament to draw attention on Israel's COVID-19 vaccine program, which excludes the nearly 5 million Palestinians who live in the West Bank and Gaza Strip under Israeli military occupation. The rally was supported by a number of left-wing groups and unions.
The fourth Geneva Convention stipulates that Israel has a responsibility as an occupying power to ensure that medical aid reaches the occupied territories to combat the coronavirus crisis. Responsibilities also include providing vaccines in a non-discriminatory manner to Palestinians under its control.
Israel has the duty to provide COVID vaccines to Palestinians. The question is why nobody talks about it here in Italy. TVs and newspapers praise Israel's vaccination campaign, but they don't say a word about how Israel is a militarized country which is not observing its international obligations and pays each vaccine dose double the price, promising pharmaceutical companies patient data.
While Palestinians' right to health care is undermined, Tel Aviv has pledged to send thousands of spare coronavirus vaccines to foreign allies that have accepted Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem, such Czech Republic, Hungary and Honduras.
These vaccine donations are the latest example of Israel's new expression of soft power. Tel Aviv rewards or sways those that have little access to vaccines in exchange for their complicity. This confirms the absence of morals and values of Israel.
We are calling on Italy, the EU and international community to take concrete measures to force Israel to provide Palestinians with vaccines. We are not begging, we demand what is ours.
In January, the United Nations voiced its concern over Israel's refusal to vaccinate the Palestinians, but the appeal has gone unheard so far. Max Civili, Rome.
Across South Korea, vaccinations against COVID-19 began, with more than 5,000 nursing home residents and care providers scheduled to get their jabs by the end of the day.
I was thinking of the elderly patients at our nursing home who have been exhausted and sad about not being able to see their families, so I'm glad to be the first person to be vaccinated. I hope herd immunity is established so that our patients can see their families and everyone can return to daily life without masks.
President Moon Jae-in observed people getting their shots, seeking to encourage people to be vaccinated when it's their turn. South Korean officials say the country should achieve herd immunity by November of this year. Herd immunity is achieved when a high percentage of people have been immunized, preventing the spread of a contagious disease. But about half of South Koreans surveyed are hesitant to get their shots. South Korea had been successful in limiting the spread of COVID-19 during the initial outbreak a year ago, but has seen waves of the virus infect hundreds of people each day since November last year.
There are many reasons why I will get my shot right away, but I think during the last year of COVID-19, the government has done well to prevent it spreading, so I trust them in terms of the vaccine.
South Korea has received vaccines, but I'm hesitant to get it. It's because in the UK, many cases of side effects have been reported, so I'm a bit reluctant. I want to watch what happens, and I'll get it if it's okay then.
Seoul's November goal of herd immunity may also be complicated by supply chain challenges and drug-resistant variants of COVID-19, with a return to normality more likely in 2022. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The nursery home in the vicinity of Tehran, and people are waiting to receive the first dose of their COVID-19 jab. At this phase, which is the second, the elderly and those with underlying diseases and the disabled will get the vaccine. The country's health minister, Said Namaki, attended the retirement home in Karizak to launch the campaign. He told reporters that these people will be vaccinated free of charge.
Fortunately, today the second phase of corona vaccination began across the country. At this stage, in addition to people working at the ICUs of the hospitals and the more vulnerable ones, the elderly will get the jab. We launched a campaign here at Kahrizak Nursery Home, but as of tomorrow, at most of the nursery centers, this will continue.
Press TV asked the minister when the normal people will take the vaccine, and he answered that hopefully by September, most of the Iranians will be vaccinated.
Based on the priorities, first off the healthcare staff, and then the elderly, and people with specific diseases, as well as those injured during the Iran-Iraq war, will be inoculated. Afterwards, it comes to the normal people, and I think most of the target groups will get the shot by mid-September.
We also interviewed the head of Iran's welfare organization, who told us that in the first stage, some 20,000 doses will be allocated to nursery centers across the country.
Over 14,000 elderly people are receiving services at nursery homes across Iran. Out of them, over 3,000 were infected, but some 2,200 got well, 506 people are under treatment, and unfortunately 375 ones lost their lives despite our efforts. At this center, 1,400 aged and disabled people will be vaccinated within 2 days.
The Islamic Republic kicked off the first phase of COVID-19 vaccination with administering the jab on medical staff working at some 600 hospitals across the country. Iranian health officials say indigenously produced shots will be used in the later stages of the campaign. Over 110,000 people have been vaccinated up to now. Iran has so far logged more than 1.6 million COVID-19 cases with over 59,800 deaths.
Iran began its COVID-19 vaccination program on February 9th. The top priority group of vaccination are doctors and nurses who are working at intensive care units of the hospitals. The next group are these elderly people and the ones with underlying diseases. Human Abedi, Kahrizak.
Venezuela's Congress, also known as the National Assembly, has requested the government of President Nicolas Maduro to expel European Union Ambassador Isabel Brillante out of the South American nation as a diplomatic action countering the recently launched sanctions from the EU against the Bolivarian Republic. The Maduro administration has denounced the European measures, describing them as illegal and harmful to the economy of Venezuela. Venezuelan officials say that the EU, along with the U.S. government, are plotting to produce a humanitarian crisis in the Latin American country in order to bring down President Nicolas Maduro. Although a UN human rights envoy recently declared foreign sanctions on Venezuela have no legal basis and must be lifted, the EU has ratified its decision. Venezuelan authorities claim they will legally confront the sanctions.
Okay, van 34 meses.
The EU, just like the US, is criminally targeting Venezuela. However, this unfair aggression will not oust Maduro.
Meanwhile, in the opposition, some say elections in Venezuela would ease the elimination of sanctions.
If free elections were held here, all foreign sanctions would blow over, but Maduro refuses to do so.
Nonetheless, socialists insist that neither the EU nor the US can judge what free elections are.
We have already had free elections guaranteed by many foreign observers, so the EU and the US are lying for political purposes.
Caracas slams the EU over violating international law with illegal sanctions. The expelling of the European ambassador is widely seen as a response to the bloc's economic policies against Venezuela. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
This is a specialized meeting on the latest studies on the coronavirus. Organized and hosted by Bacayatullah University, the event brought together epidemiologists, virologists, and other medical experts to present their team's latest findings on prevention and treatment of COVID-19.
We tried the so-called plasmapheresis in treating COVID-19 patients. What is plasmapheresis? It's a method of removing blood plasma from the body and re-injecting it into the bloodstream. We conducted this method on 28 COVID patients, and it was effective so far. We need to gather a large sample to achieve more reliable results.
We conducted a single-centered retrospective observational study of 60 laboratory-confirmed COVID patients and administered low-dose prednisolone in combination with naproxen and lopinavir. This helped reduce the length of patients' hospitalization.
Since the pandemic broke out in Iran, Bagayatullah University has dedicated its R&D centers to COVID-related projects. So far, it has launched 200 research projects that seek to find a way to tackle the pandemic. Among them is a recombinant-based COVID vaccine that is making its way to the human trial phase.
We are wrapping up the animal trial stage and will soon begin the human trials of our vaccine. Our university has become a hotspot of major projects that center on COVID-19. We were amongst the first center that proposed plasma therapy for COVID-19. We're also conducting research on stem cell therapy and other viable treatments for the novel disease.
With the Bagayatullah vaccine, Iran now possesses three viable candidates that have made their way to the human trial: Covfars, which is a recombinant vaccine, and Coviran, which works based on a weakened coronavirus. This, as Iran has already started its mass inoculation program using Russia's Sputnik V.
Bagayatullah Hospital has since day one been one of the most active places in the fight against COVID-19. Now, as many biotech firms are concentrating their efforts on prevention and vaccine development, this center has also paid attention to treatment. Researchers here say they're very close to an effective COVID medicine. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Almost 1 year after the first positive case of COVID-19 was confirmed in Afghanistan, the country has now launched its first COVID-19 vaccination campaign. Representatives of medics, Afghan armed troops and journalists are the first ones who will receive doses of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine donated earlier this month by India.
Today I congratulate the people of Afghanistan on the launch of the first stage of COVID-19 vaccination. This is a big opportunity for the people of Afghanistan. I request all government bodies, media, and our religious scholars to cooperate with each other to implement COVID-19 vaccination campaign smoothly.
Afghanistan received 500,000 doses of AstraZeneca's vaccine from the Serum Institute of India, which is producing the vaccine for mid- and low-income countries, earlier this month. The spread of COVID-19 in Afghanistan hardly hit the Afghan society due to mismanagement and lack of medical equipment. However, officials here say the government is committed to implement COVID-19 vaccination campaign all over the country.
We don't expect any miracles. We need full collaboration of the entire society. So let's help this campaign to be implemented justly.
Taliban has announced its backing for the vaccination campaign. However, the inoculations comes amid relentless violence despite intra-Afghan talks. As official statistics estimate, up to 10 million Afghans that make nearly a third of the population might have been infected with the coronavirus. Nearly 60,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and over 2,000 deaths have been recorded so far. Afghan officials say the pandemic is still a serious problem for the country and urge health workers to vaccinate the whole nation in a fair and transparent manner. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The passage of time will never let the world forget the war crimes former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein committed against the innocent Iranian people. As part of its heinous crimes, the Iraqi dictator bombarded northwestern city of Sardash in 1978, killing 119 innocent civilians and exposing more than 8,000 to toxic gases, which maimed them forever. But Saddam was not alone in this 8-year war, and there were several countries, including Germany, France, the UK, and the US, that assisted him by arming his regime by chemical weapons. The Islamic Republic has always stressed that those complicit in Saddam's war crimes must be brought to justice. Therefore, in the presence of the country's top officials, an international conference was held in Tehran to look into the legal and international claims of the Islamic Republic in this regard.
Many countries gave Saddam intelligence, political, economic, military, and media support. All the world witnessed that these countries all stood against the great nation of Iran, but the United Nations could not play its role. The UN did not declare the Iraqi regime as the aggressor and the perpetrator of war. This is the question that the international community must ask the UN. Why the Security Council did not stop the aggressor from committing crimes against the Islamic Republic?
In the face of the chemical attacks, the international community turned down Tehran's frequent requests for deployment of experts for field investigations, something that Iran's foreign minister blasted during this event.
The Iraqi regime used chemical weapons against Iranian civilians and non-civilians, and also the Iraqi people. In 6 or 7 reports by the United Nations, it was declared that the chemical weapons were first used against military forces and then civilians. But the United Nations does not have a good record in supporting international law, and during the imposed war, it did not even use the means to make power balance.
It was also stressed at this conference that the assassination of the former Iranian IRGC Quds Force Commander General Qasem Soleimani is top on the agenda to be followed up as part of this plan. Thinkers and researchers from 17 countries presented their papers on the legal aspects of the imposed war on Iran. These experts in both virtual and in-person methods elaborated on how the foreign countries helped Saddam's regime in killing civilians. Human Abedi, Tehran.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi,
Kitty. Good morning. Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah,
who allowed none to witness when he created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when he authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing him. Terrans fall low in awe of him. Faces are humbled in fear of him. And everything mighty yields to his mightiness. So to thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may his blessings be upon his messenger endlessly, and his salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for thee. I ask thee concerning the complaints of thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The debate.
Hello. And and welcome to Beit. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Almost 2.5 years after the brutal murder of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, the U.S. has released a report pointing the finger at the Saudi Crown Prince for the responsibility of the gruesome dismemberment. What does this mean for Mohammed bin Salman, and what will it mean for Saudi Arabia? Well, according to the Biden administration so far, it means not to rupture relations, but to recalibrate between Washington and Riyadh. What does this mean? Well, stay with us as we take a look at this and a lot more on The Debate.
The U.S. has finally released a long-awaited report on the gruesome murder of Jamal Khashoggi, confirming that the Crown Prince had personally approved an operation to capture or kill him. Accordingly, the U.S. says it has imposed sanctions against Saudi Arabia over the murder. However, Washington's restrictions only target members of the Saudi Royal Guard's Rapid Intervention Force, not their patron and commander, Mohammed bin Salman. That once again exposes Washington's double standard in dealing with criminals, despite its own intelligence assessment that Khashoggi was killed and his body dismembered at the behest of bin Salman in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in 2018. The UN has reacted to the CIA report, saying the U.S. fails to take practical steps to hold the main culprit accountable.
With the release of the U.S. report confirming Saudi officials' culpability at the highest levels, the United States should now take the lead in ensuring accountability for this crime and for setting in place the international mechanisms to prevent and punish such acts in the future. The United States government should impose sanctions against the Crown Prince as it has done for the other perpetrators, targeting his personal assets, but also his international engagements.
Reactions are also pouring in from other authorities and legal experts who have dismissed the U.S. report as too little, too late.
This is not enough. The Crown Prince needs to face accountability. He needs to face sanctions, asset freezes, travel bans.
Analysts are also criticizing the White House for failing to take the Saudi Crown Prince to account.
Nobody saw the actual report until now, and yes, it's confirmed that indeed, as the Saudis say, a rogue operative was responsible, and that rogue is bin Salman himself.
Many believe Washington's failure to hold bin Salman accountable is due to its interests. Even the U.S. itself has admitted that it is seeking its own interests in maintaining a close partnership with Riyadh.
I would say the relationship with Saudi Arabia is an important one. We have significant ongoing interests. We remain committed to the defense of the kingdom. And so what we've done by the actions that we've taken is really not to rupture the relationship, but to recalibrate it.
In fact, decades-old U.S.-Saudi nexus have benefited the both, with Riyadh spending its petrodollars for American arms and Washington hatching plots to destabilize the region for its own sake. The U.S. backing for the Saudi regime's deadly mayhem in Yemen over the past 5 years is part of such plots. If the new U.S. administration claims that it really wants to break with the policies of the Trump government, it should walk the walk rather than talk the talk and stop supporting the al-Saud regime that has a long history of malign disregard for not only its own citizens like Khashoggi, but even the impoverished people like Yemenis.
I'd like to welcome my guests to this debate, journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnia out of Brussels and writer and journalist John White out of Edinburgh. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start it off in Brussels. And Elijah, I mean, we assess that Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, has approved an operation in Istanbul, Turkey, to capture or kill Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Now, this is from the office of the U.S. Director of National Intelligence. Your assessment of their finding and what should be the results?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
First of all, I think what the U.S.
Elijah, stay with me. I'm so sorry, Elijah. We're going to try to work on. We're having some
of Khashoggi.
Okay.
They're doing nothing against Saudi Arabia or responsible for bombing Yemen every single day. It is not a humanitarian issue. It's a public relation issue that Biden.
Okay, my apologies for the audio difficulties. Hopefully, we can take care of that. Now, John, your perspective. I mean, Elijah said that basically it means nothing. Your take on what the U.S. says, the statement about recalibrating. I mean, what does recalibrating mean when we're talking about relationships, when we're talking about a situation like this?
Marcia, good evening. It's nice to be with you.
Nice to have you.
There are times when the truth is not enough and when only the unvarnished truth will do. And the unvarnished truth when it comes to Saudi Arabia is that this is less a country and more a family business whose primary business is murder. And in the case of Mr. Khashoggi, we are talking murder most foul. This gentleman was lured to the Saudi consulate in Istanbul on the premise of receiving divorce papers he required to marry his then fiance. He received no divorce papers, but his head was divorced from his body. His body was dismembered, put in bags, and his remains have never been found. And to talk about recalor as a man behind this operation is to prize the gesture over the deed. We know, everybody knows, that geostrategic and economic interests supersede humanitarian issues when it comes to the US and its various interests around the world.
I mean, John, how is it that a resident of the United States really can be cut to pieces and the main culprit not be held responsible by Washington? We know that this happens, but it is quite amazing that they continue to get away with these type of abuses.
Because, as I just said, geostrategic and economic reality supersede humanitarian issues when it comes to the U.S. and its various allies, so-called, around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. The U.S. cannot continue to play the humanitarian card and then allow these monstrous states such as Saudi Arabia, the most repressive state in the world today, along with that other sectarian monstrosity, Israel, to get away with murder, with the violations of international law on a daily basis, and maintain its supposed role as the leader of the so-called free world. And today, on the back of this report, on the back of the inaction based on this report, the banner of human rights, which the US has never done, waving it in the face of a world that feels it is divinely ordained to dominate, lies in tatters.
So, John, why do you think that the US even released this report at this time?
That's a difficult one, actually, because it's embarrassing that on the back of a report which names MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, is the man who ordered this operation to either kidnap or murder, I would suggest murder, Mr. Jamal Khashoggi, that why would they come out with this report and then talk about recalibration? Joe Biden came into office promising to reset U.S. relations and to reassert U.S. Leadership in the world as part of a multilateral coalition of the willing. But he's now shown that this is a case of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. He's just done bombing Syria just a month after coming into office. And now this is a humiliating reverse and embarrassment, and it does nothing to sustain the US reputation in the world. Not just among its allies, but among the people of the world, people like us, who understand the sheer hypocrisy of this policy and of this inaction towards MBS.
How do you think that's going to affect the U.S. in general, John? You just talked about the sheer hypocrisy of it all. On the one hand, when the United States talks about human rights and defending human lives, and then we see one of their closest allies, basically, on the one hand, they've said that MBS is responsible. On the other hand, not holding him responsible at all. So tell me about the credibility of Washington itself and how it's affected.
Well, its credibility was not very great before this, and this is going to do it more damage, especially because, as I say, the Biden administration promised to reset U.S. Relations with the rest of the world after 4 years of Trump's dysfunctionality. This just shows you that any U.S. administration, regardless of who the president is presiding over an empire and acts as an emperor over that empire with a democratic integument. So democracy is placed to one side conveniently when geostrategic and economic interests demand that it is. Why does the U.S. think it has any leg to stand on when it comes to lecturing Iran or Cuba or Venezuela or Russia or China on human rights when some of its closest allies are the most grievous violators of human rights on the planet and in the history of the planet?
Well, we're trying to reestablish connection with Elijah. We're having some audio difficulty. Hopefully we will get that taken care of. But staying with you, John, now former U.S. President Donald Trump has called Saudi Arabia a milk cow. Is it possible that Washington wants to get even more out of the Saudis, and this is why the report has even been released.
Well, the Western governments, the U.S. prime among them, also the U.K. and France, are based themselves at the feet of the Saudi kleptocracy because of arms sales, because of security contracts. The U.K. and the U.S. and France have been directly involved in the genocidal conflict against Yemen that has been driven by the Saudis since 2015. Thousands and thousands of civilians killed, civilians being killed as I speak. Humanitarian crisis. Amnesty International has called this the most dangerous and the worst humanitarian crisis in the world today. No action is taken. Nothing meaningful is done to hold this monstrosity of a sectarian state, as I mentioned, to any kind of account. And it really does suggest that we're now living in a world of gangsterism rather than international law or any norms of diplomacy.
Okay, we have Elijah joining us by phone, though. Elijah, sorry about the technical difficulties. Now, Elijah, in your perspective, what does this say about international rule of law when a high-ranking official of a country is proven to have ordered such a brutal murder and then not be held responsible for it?
Because they think they can get away with it because they have the money and the Americans are in need of their money, not their oil. Saudi Arabia has been paying whatever amount Barack Obama wanted, after him, Donald Trump, and now they will pay to Biden. And if Biden is saying Mohammed bin Salman is responsible for the killing, but we are putting sanctions on the team that he has sent, that are part of his personal protection team, it's a mockery. And it is a clear violation of the international laws. And we don't need to repeat it again and again and again. The U.S. are careless about the international law. They've never respected it. They don't do it in Yemen. They don't do it in Iraq. They don't do it in Syria. They still occupy Syria. So what they are doing is a kind of a public relations move that Biden is in need of to come out and then after 100 days in power to say, I have achieved something and I have satisfied the mainstream media that are looking for some condemnation to Saudi Arabia, but they use the word, we are recalibrating. So they're trying to really insult our intelligence and make fun of us by saying they're recalibrating by putting sanction on the team that is responsible for the assassination and not by the person who gave the order. And this report has been in the hands of the Congress since a very long time, and Trump refused to publish it, and now Biden is publishing it, but he's not publishing the real report that the CIA got and that Turkey has and collaborated, and all the communication between Riyadh and the consulate, Saudi consulate. So we're not talking about human rights, we're talking about something that Biden needs to throw in the eyes of the mainstream media to say, I have given you the piece of meat that you are looking for, you can eat it now and go away. And I can continue my policy that is exactly the same as Donald Trump, as every U.S. administration, but with more intelligence and with less talking.
Well, Elijah, staying with you, I mean, when the de facto ruler of a country acts against international law and is ordering such a gruesome murder, shouldn't the whole regime be held responsible? And why aren't we seeing sanctions, not just from the United States, but what about the United Nations? Where's the United Nations in all of this?
Well, we live in a world where it is a cherry picking, and we live in a world where the strongest dominate, and we live in a world that if you don't stand to your right and you look for how you impose your rules, then other countries will eat you up. The United Nations is a tool in the hand of the U.S. Europe is in a tool in the hand of the U.S. Therefore, the U.S. decides who is against the international law, when he is or this country is against the international law. It depends when it's suitable for them and therefore their foreign policy. And that has been the case since always.
Well, John, I mean, when we see terrorism is ignored like this and goes unpunished, I mean, what is the likely outcome? Doesn't it simply give credence to a rogue state and encourages it even more to participate in other illegalities?
Well, the world we live in, actually, is a world mired in crisis, an economic crisis that evinces no sign of dissipating anytime soon. The contradictions of a world in which the tectonic plates of geopolitical power have been shifting have been accelerated by COVID. And this is a desperate US administration, a US empire trying to sustain its leadership and its hegemony, which is now being seriously challenged on a strategic level by Russia and on an economic and growing strategic level by China. The Middle East has always been seen as a US backyard, and it no longer is. And that's why it has to cling on to its alliance with the Saudis and the Israelis, regardless of what they do. And they understand that in the dynamic of this relationship and this alliance, they now have the key card. They have the whip hand because they know the US is desperate to maintain its dissipating influence in this strategically and geostrategically crucial region of the world. So this is going to go on. The Saudis will get a free pass. The Israelis will get a free pass for their ongoing crimes against the Palestinian people. And the people of the world will look on aghast at how the rule of law is being replaced by the rule of the gun, or in the case of this murder, the rule of the bone saw. There's an old saying, wrong forever on the throne, truth forever on the scaffold. I can think of no other way to describe the world we live in today.
Hmm. Elijah, your thoughts? I mean, there are international calls to hold the Saudi Crown Prince MBS responsible. Do you think that eventually justice will be served? And what will it take for us to get there?
I don't think as long as the U.S. is in control of most of the Middle East, there's going to be justice. There is no justice in the Middle East by the U.S. What the U.S. is doing, U.S. is occupying Iraq, U.S. is occupying Syria, U.S. is bombing the Iraqi-Syrian borders where the troops are fighting ISIS. Is that justice? I mean, when the Americans are occupying the economy, they're crippling the economy of Syria, starving population, they are imposing sanctions on Iran, starving the population. On Venezuela, they're going everywhere doing the same thing. That is not justice. We don't live in a world of justice. We live in a jungle where the strong impose its will on the weak. And Iran has managed to stand up to the U.S. Now it is up to Iraq to do the same. Lebanon is trying to do the same. But if we are waiting for justice coming from the U.S., particularly towards Saudi Arabia, where we haven't seen anything on Yemen, they just said, we are going to stop the support to Saudi Arabia in supplying bombs, but we are going to allow our allies to do so. So nothing is happening. And when the Houthis bomb one location in Saudi Arabia, the whole world stands up. And when the Saudis prevent 14 ships from reaching Yemen and allow the population to starve, then the world is silent. What are you talking about? You're looking for justice. There is no justice.
Indeed, a sample of the world we live in today. I appreciate both of you being with us on this debate. Journalist and political analyst Elijah Macnea out of Brussels, and writer and journalist John White of Edinburgh. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com,
www.iranradio.com/en.
In the limelight.
Militia groups involved in the 6th of January insurrection want to stage another attack around President Joe Biden's upcoming address to Congress, aiming to blow up the complex and kill lawmakers, the acting chief of U.S. Capitol Police has warned. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Ed Pilkington. The piece is titled, Militia Attack Groups Want to Blow Up Capitol During Biden's Speech, Police Chief Warns. Stay with us for more of Ed Pilkington's article. Militia groups involved in the 6th of January insurrection want to stage another attack around President Joe Biden's upcoming address to Congress, aiming to blow up the complex and kill lawmakers, the acting chief of U.S. Capitol Police has warned. In alarming testimony to the House subcommittee, Yogananda Pittman said that threats were circulating that directly targeted the president's first formal speech to a joint session of Congress. A date for the event has not yet been announced. We know that members of the militia groups that were present on 6th of January have stated their desires that they want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as possible, Pittman said. The police chief's warning was made in the context of her trying to justify to Congress why exceptional security measures put in place in the wake of the 6th of January assault needed to remain in place until alternatives could be devised. A large area around the Capitol is still surrounded by a 7-foot non-scalable fence, and thousands of National Guard members continue to be deployed. Based on that information, we think that it's prudent that Capitol Police maintain its enhanced and robust security posture until we address those vulnerabilities going forward, she said. Her words are also likely to be taken seriously as a clear indication of the ongoing threat posed by the armed militia members who took part in the storming of the Capitol, in which 5 people died and almost 140 police officers were injured. Ashley Babbitt, a Trump supporter and a military veteran, was shot and killed by a Capitol police officer on Wednesday, 6th of January. Several of the most prominent armed militia and extremist groups in the United States were at the forefront of the Capitol riot. The assault followed an incendiary rally by former President Donald Trump to promote his big lie that the November election was stolen from him by Joe Biden. A number of militia members have been arrested and charged as part of the giant federal investigation into the events of 6th of January. In an indictment handed down last week against 6 alleged members of the Oath Keepers militia, the Justice Department charged that the group had planned for several months to prevent Congress from certifying the Electoral College results of the presidential election. Several members of the far-right group, the Proud Boys, have also been charged with criminal conspiracy. This week's congressional hearings are the start of what is expected to be a slew of official investigations into the drastic security failures that gave rise to the breach of the Capitol complex. In her testimony, Police Chief Pittman confirmed that some 800 rioters had entered the building and that the total number who were present amounted to as many as 10,000. Capitol Police Chief Pittman has stepped up to lead the Capitol Police Force after the chief at the time of the storming, Stephen Sund, resigned just days after the catastrophe. In his evidence to Congress earlier this week, Stephen Sund said, "These criminals came prepared for war." The FBI and other law enforcement agencies are tracking closely far-right online chatter for early warnings on any possible repeat attacks in Washington or other U.S. cities. In addition to President Biden's upcoming congressional address, law enforcement will also be on alert on days leading up to 4th of March, the date set by the extreme conspiracy theory QAnon for Donald Trump to return to Washington to start a second term as president. Followers of the crank movement have been growing increasingly agitated by the fantasy around the Donald Trump comeback on 4th of March, the date on which U.S. presidents were originally inaugurated. Meanwhile, five alleged members of the far-right Proud Boys group have been charged with criminal conspiracy in last month's deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol that sought to keep then-President Donald Trump in power, according to a criminal complaint unsealed on Thursday, 25th of February. Federal prosecutors on Thursday also outlined details of a suspected plot by the anti-government Oath Keepers group to stage a quick reaction force outside Washington on 6th of January, ready to fight hand-to-hand if ordered to do so by former President Donald Trump. More than 200 people have been charged with federal offenses in the bloody assault on Congress, which claimed the lives of five people at the Capitol and led to Donald Trump's impeachment trial on a charge of inciting insurrection. Democratic prosecutors at the impeachment trial have described how they said Trump laid the groundwork for the attack by falsely claiming he was robbed of re-election by voter fraud, then exhorting his supporters to fight like hell and to stop the steal. Two alleged members of yet another right-wing extremist militia, the Boogaloo Boys, were arrested by FBI agents in Louisville, Kentucky, on Thursday on federal charges of instigating acts of violence through social media. One of the two, John Subleski, a 32-year-old, was accused of inciting a riot in downtown Louisville, Kentucky on 6th of January, contemporaneous with the Capitol riots, in which he and others pointed rifles at motorists and barricaded a number of roads, federal prosecutors said. The second person, Adam Turner, was accused of directing threats at police officers. The Louisville charges underscore the dimension of the right-wing extremism across the country in the aftermath of the tumultuous 2020 presidential elections. At the same time, the U.S. Justice Department is considering whether to charge members of the groups under the federal Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, known as RICO, normally used against organized crime. In the new Proud Boys complaint, prosecutors charged William Pressman, Christopher Kuhn, Luis Enrique Colon, Felicia Connold, and Corey Connold with conspiring together to block Congress from certifying President Joe Biden's election victory. It alleges that as far back as December, organizers of the Proud Boys, including its leader, Enrique Tarrio, encouraged their members to travel to Washington on Wednesday, 6th of January. Enrique Tarrio was arrested 2 days before the Capitol riots on charges of possessing two high-capacity rifle magazines and for burning a Black Lives Matter banner during a December demonstration by Trump supporters. To date, the United States has charged at least 18 people who are believed to be associated or allied with the extreme group, the Proud Boys.
From the heart of beautiful Iran, IRIB English Radio.